Good morning, Bookers, and welcome back to 10 Minutes of Tanya. I want to express our gratitude, as always, to Marilyn and Michael Fedak for the generous sponsorship of 10 Minutes of Meaning. Please help yourself to coffee, slushy, and Rabshaya the corner. And please remember to join the 10 Minutes of Meaning community rather than the WhatsApp group, as we're shifting over to the community model. We are in Tanya Perek Yud Beis, towards the end of Perek Yud Beis. We've made our way through the definition of the Tzaddik, who's Gamor Tzaddik V'Tovlo, Tzaddik V'Ralo, Rasha V'Tovlo, Rasha V'Ralo. The four archetypes of the Tzaddik and the Rasha, two of each. And all that was left was the Beinoni. Who is this Beinoni, this in-betweener, this intermediary? Who is this Beinoni who's in between? The Beinoni on the outside does everything right. On the outside is indiscernible from a Tzaddik. In the interaction with the greater world, always makes the right decisions. And yet, in the inner world of the Beinoni, in the inner world of the Beinoni continues to struggle. We're learning also this morning is dedicated in the memory of our Opa, Aaron Ben Yehuda Halevi, whose yahrzeit is today, my mother-in-law's father, our beloved Opa, whom we miss. He probably never learned Tanya, but I think he would have loved it if he would have tried it. He was a hardcore Yekke. I'm not sure he ever opened a Tanya, unless Rabbi Wein told him to, then he would have. But in any case, in his memory, we learned Tanya with him today. So the Beinoni, who in the inner world, the Beinoni is struggling, even though the Beinoni always wins every battle and certainly the greater war, but in the inside struggle. So how? That's where we left off, is what is the methodology, the strategy? And we who aspire, halavai Beinoni, halavai Beinoni, as I told the barista in Yerushalayim, when she asked me what size I want my coffee, I said, halavai Beinoni. And she looked at me and said, what? I said, never mind. Halavai Beinoni. Halavai Beinoni. So how can we be Beinonim? We want to be Beinonim. How can we achieve it? How can the Beinoni successfully deflect? If the Beinoni in the inner world is struggling with urges, temptations, desires, and the Beinoni always wins and always does the right thing, how? How does that willpower, how does the willpower always win out? Raksha lazem mo'il harshimo b'mochem, says the Alter Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya. Rather, for this purpose of ensuring that the mind rules over the heart, the Beinoni benefits from the roshem that's left, the residual impact of the meditative prayers in his brain that lingers after they're completed. In other words, the Alter Rebbe discussed that the Beinoni in the time of davening, when a Beinoni has talis and tefillin, or when a Beinoni is davening mincha, in the middle of the inconvenient day, when the Beinoni davens marav, even though it's late at night, the Beinoni in those moments feels highly connected. You're in shul, no cell phone, disconnected from technology. The Beinoni feels, oh, there's a Ribbono Shel Olam, there's an Eibishter, there's a Father in heaven, he loves me. I'm a chelek alakam mimal. The Beinoni's mind, brain is engaged. In that moment, the Beinoni is not tempted to look at or think about or go or do or say. The Beinoni is at the highest level. And the Baal HaTanya described, that we mentioned last week, how this Beinoni comes off of tefillah, and that feeling of Avas Hashem, what is achieved through that meditation, is often lost. We close the sitter, we take off the talis tefillin, before we're even in the parking lot, we're already thinking, we're already desiring, we're already maybe even acting, maybe we're already typing on our phone even before we're out of the parking lot of the shul. But nevertheless, there is a residual impact and effect. We think that the tefillah is gone. First time we encounter the Yetzer Hara outside of the davening, we close the sitter, and a moment later, there's an opportunity to listen or say juicy Lashon Hara, a moment later to look at it, a moment later to do, and we're tempted to give in and indulge. There is a residual impact and effect, a roshem b'mochen in the brain, because the brain is what's ultimately going to win over the heart. The eye sees and the heart desires, and the brain regulates. The brain is what's disciplined. We have to engage the brain that knows better, the brain that can be thoughtful and mindful, the brain that has a consciousness and a conscience. It's the brain that can rule over the heart. As I've said many times in learning Tanya, and before that, Igeres Ramban, and before that, Mesillas Yesharim, we tend to think that there is no space, there's no pause in between the urge and the action. We tend to think that I have an urge, I want to, and as soon as I want to, I do. And what can I do? It's not my fault. The urge arose, the desire came. Something as seemingly innocuous as eating unhealthy food, 12 o'clock at night, hungry, a lot still going on. I want to hit the pantry and down an entire bag of Cape Cod potato chips. The urge. And in between that urge and appetite and finishing the last chip in the bag, we think, it's not my fault, there's nothing I could do. And we fail to realize that there is a pause. There is a moment in between. And if we engage the brain rather than the heart, if we say, how will I feel in the morning if I eat this now? What will my lab results look like if I eat this bag of potato chips right now? When I'm done with the bag of potato chips, will I feel really good about myself or will I feel horrible? All we have to do is engage the brain even very superficially, and it will always win out over the heart. The problem is we tell the brain, be quiet, go back in your place. No one wants to hear from you. And then the heart gets us to pursue it. But if we can engage that pause, that moment in between the urge and the act, and the brain can rule over the heart, then we can win out. The residual effect of tefillah is sufficient to get the reverence of Hashem and the love of Hashem, which remain hidden in the right chamber of the heart. Not only in the brain, but even within our heart, as we saw, our heart is made of different chambers. The left chamber of the heart is the area of the Yetzer Hara, but the right chamber of the heart is the area of the love of Hashem and the awe of Hashem. So not only the intellect, the brain, but the intellect of the brain engages the right chamber of the heart and says, you love Hashem, and you have awe and fear of Hashem. And in that moment, Lizgaber v'lishla araza misavataiva. Then the Beinoni, when he feels a desire for self-gratification, for ego, he'll be strong and triumph over the evil. Preventing it from gaining control and dominance over his body, which the Alter Rebbe already told us is a small city. Russia and Ukraine are fighting a bitter, long war over property. Who will rule? Who will govern? Who will be the king? Who will be in charge? Well, our animal soul and our godly soul are battling over the city that's called me. Who will name the city? Who will govern the city? Who will regulate the city? And if we want our brain, our highest part, our godly soul to win, to be triumphant, we have to engage the brain and the right side of the heart. We don't want to allow the left heart to win over the small city and bring its desire to fruition, which will influence the body. So there is a residual effect. When during davening, and I would add during learning, and I would add during chesed, when we engage our soul, our highest and best self, even if it's fleeting, and even if it's not permanently lasting, there is a residual impact and effect when I feel connected and I feel close and I feel my neshama, my soul is alive. Even though my guf is going to kick in again, there's going to be the bag of potato chips every night at midnight. It's calling my name and the battle is going to rage again. But the residual impact of earlier that day, my davening, my learning, the chesed, the tzedakah I gave, expressing my best self, awakening the brain and awakening the right side of the heart, is going to remain. And the residual effect of tefillah helps the Beinoni, even in the mind alone, to not have bad thoughts. The evil on the left side of the Beinoni's heart does not have control or dominance to overcome the willpower of the brain. What happens? The left side of the heart says, think about that. Think about the food you shouldn't eat, the image you shouldn't see, the video you shouldn't watch. Think about the act you shouldn't be doing. Think about it. The left side of the heart's like, it feels good. It feels good. You know you won. Everybody's doing it. It wasn't so bad. The world didn't come to an end last time you did it. The left side of the heart, the source of the Yetzirah, knows exactly the language, the methodology, the strategy to try to get us. But if the brain and the right side of the heart are engaged, it tells the left side of the heart, you go back in your place. You go back to your home. Nobody wants to hear from you because all you'll do is sabotage and destroy. All you'll do is harm the trajectory and future of our life. So where do we get the energy and strength to engage the brain over the heart and the right side of the heart over the left side of the heart? We get it from the residual impact felt from the higher things that we do. So a Jew goes through a day and didn't daven, didn't focus or pay attention or take seriously their davening, didn't use davening as an intimate rendezvous with the Almighty. A Jew goes through a day and they didn't learn Torah for one moment. A Jew goes through a day and they didn't pause to do chesed or care about another. So that Jew is weak and weakened. Now the left side of the heart, ooh, it's got the advantage. Because the right side of the heart and the brain, they've fallen asleep. They're not active, they're not engaged. But when a Jew starts their day, the Kol HaBoker, the Kinyan Masechta, then comes into davening, and then does an act of chesed, then gives some tzedakah, then opens another sefer, then listens to a Torah podcast on the way to work rather than something else. When that Jew is awake and is alive later, when there's the opportunity to look, to gaze, to think, to say, to do, there's that voice in the back of that Jew that says, you're bigger and you're better than that. Don't let that thought in. Don't do that act. Don't sacrifice or forfeit who you are. Fight, 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 fight. We're able to overcome those bad thoughts. Those bad thoughts. How? What's the methodology? It stops us from willingly embracing the bad thought, which has risen involuntarily from his head to his heart. Kaniska Leil. We mentioned this above, and I'll repeat it. And I'll tell you the mashal that I always say. I'm sure I said it already in Tanya, but I'll repeat it because it bears repeating again and again. I saw it in a sefer that quotes a Kabbalah sefer. We think a yid is walking down the street, and there's an image. There's a person. They're in a state of dress. They draw their attention, the eye. They want to look. They want to gaze. They want to take a mental image, mental picture. So what does Hashem hold us accountable for? The fact that this healthy Jew saw something that a healthy person is drawn to and noticed it? Or the fact that we dwell on it, we capture it, and we keep it? So the Sefer brought a mashal of the chassid who was up late at night, haunted and bothered by terrible thoughts, terrible hirurim, thoughts of inadequacy, thoughts of anxiety, but also thoughts of sin, thoughts of avera, thoughts of temptation, thoughts of fantasy. The thoughts were haunting him. So he goes to his Rebbe's house, and he knocks on the front door. No answer. He's got to speak to his Rebbe. He's looking for chizuk. How does he do it? How does he overcome it? The Rebbe doesn't answer. So he bangs harder on the door, knocks on the door. The Rebbe doesn't answer. So this brazen chassid sneaks around the side of the house and looks in the window and sees the Rebbe sitting at his table, learning Torah. He knocks on the window. Oh, they get my Rebbe's attention. Nothing, gurnished. He gives up and he goes home. And he said, next morning he comes to Shul and Davins and he waits for Davin to end so he could go up to the Rebbe. Davin ends and he goes up to the Rebbe and he says, Rebbe, I came last night. I needed you so badly. And the Rebbe says, I know what you needed and I already gave you the answer. He says, you know what I needed? I didn't speak to you. You gave me the answer. You didn't speak to me. The Rebbe says, yes. Last night you came to my home and you knocked on the door and I didn't answer. And you knocked louder, and I didn't answer. And you came and tried to sneak in through the side, and I didn't answer. I didn't let you in. My dear chassid, when the thoughts come and the thoughts knock, you can't control what knocks. You're not accountable for what knocks, but we are accountable for what we let in. When a thought knocks, we're not responsible. So the Alter Rebbe here says too, the thought knocks, this thought comes up. I want to look at, I want to say, I want to go, I want to do. That thought, it's knocking on our door. We're not responsible. We're not accountable. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't blame us for the thought that knocks. But in that moment, we have a choice. Are we going to open the door? Come on in. Make yourself comfortable. Move in and stay for the day. Are we going to let the thought come in? Or are we going to close the double lock and the triple lock and put on the alarm and say, thought, get lost. Yes, you knocked, but get out. You have no place here. As soon as the bad thought reaches his mind, we dismiss it, we push it out vigorously with two hands, writes the Alter Rebbe, two hands. And what we do is we engage our better self and we say, this was my message last week. I wrote it in the article, you can find it on my website. There's a concept that we give Hashem Nachas Ruach. And if we understood that the greatest pleasure in the world is knowing we're giving Hashem nachas. It's much greater than whatever we want to look at for the moment. It's greater than whatever we want to eat in that moment. It's greater than whatever we want to say in that moment. If we're tempted and we're about to engage and act, and stop, we stop and say, "Wow, if I don't do this, you know the kind of nachas I'm going to give Hashem? Hashem is looking, he's watching, he's here right now. And if I don't, you know how happy I'll make him? That's the greater pleasure. It's an even greater pleasure. So if we engage the thought, the proper thought, the intellect to know that Hashem sees and Hashem loves and we give Hashem nachas. And there's no greater pleasure in the world than giving nachas to Hashem. Mesiach taito miyad, immediately we won't do it. Ve'ena mekabel beratzon. And we'll refuse to willingly embrace the thought. Afil lahayar bo beratzon. We will not allow the thought to move in. V'chol sheken la'alasa adas la'asas chas v'shom afil adaber bo. We won't think about it. We won't dwell on it. We won't speak about it. We'll tell it, get lost. You have no business being here. We'll push it out with two hands. We'll lock the door behind it. Because if we allow the thought in, if we dwell and fantasize and linger and marinate on that thought, that's an act of a rasha. That's wicked. Because Chazal concluded that hirhurei avera, fantasizing about the avera is worse than doing the avera. Doing the avera, it's a moment of weakness. But sitting and thinking about, that's premeditated. That we're allowing ourselves to do. That's even more intense. We're even more accountable for allowing that. So Mahara Baratzon, if we willingly fantasize about doing something wrong, that's called a Rasha. The Beinoni is not a Rasha. They're a Beinoni. So there's a battle inside the Beinoni. The battle, the Tzaddik, the thought never knocks. The Tzaddik is like, well, what's an image I shouldn't look at? What's Cape Cod potato chips? I don't even know what you're talking about. Why would I ever eat that? Why would I ever do that? The tzaddik, the thought never even knocks. The beinoni, the thought knocks, but he doesn't let it in. The rasha says, shalom aleichem, come on in, unpack, stay the day. What are we doing next? That's the difference between them. Halavai beinoni, if we can get to that level of the beinoni. Not that we never have the knock, the thought. Not the tzaddik. Halavai beinoni, to get to that level that it comes and it knocks, but we push it out with two hands, and we lock the door and say, get lost. And we say, you have no business being here. Mitzvah Hashem, next time we'll finish up Perek Yud Beis and move on from here. It'd be a day of Besaris Tevis, Yeshuas, Venechamos.